Hey, my friends, welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show. Once again, bringing you the world news and health research. Hope you guys are having a terrific day, as always. Hope you guys are staying up to date on all the shows and all the crazy topics that are going on, including a lot of the health articles we've been covering all week long. A lot of different stuff we've been covering. And be sure to sign up for the updates. I told you guys this before, every day. Stay on top of it. Sign up for the weekly newsletter. Subscribe. The Brower Show and Team Health Masters. Just put your name and email in, and we'll send you right to your email. Inbox right there. All you can do is click, and you'll have the show, and you'll have all the coupon sales, three packs, kits, and all the stuff as the first one out there. So be sure to check that out. And also, too, the product of the week, which it won earlier, the zinc glycinate, incredibly good formula, simple, effective, unlike certain other things that came out in 2020, 2021 that were safe and effective. Zinc's actually really safe and effective and healthy for you.
Funny.
we'll talk in more detail later on another article that I have on it. But right now, this is an interesting topic that popped up, and I bring this up because we carry that non-GMO beet juice crystals that come out of Germany.
I use it every day.
So do I. And it's interesting. This new article came out and said beet root juice reduces blood pressure in people over 60 in a new clinical trial. It said beetroot juice is rich in nitrates, which convert into nitric oxide. We've talked about this before, a compound that helps reduce blood pressure and improve heart function. Research found that older people had a specific mix of bacteria in their mouths that can actually convert more nitrate into nitric oxide, and that this, coupled with the beet juice powder, massively increases nitric oxide production. So I thought that was interesting. So the product by itself has an incredible increase in nitric oxide, which helps out with blood pressure, blood flow, gives you a better pump in the gym, increases blood to every part of the body. But apparently it helped older folks that were over 60 even more. So I thought that was a cool article on the beets. And then you can remember, if you're eating beets, beets are one of the most contaminated products or food items or vegetables with glyphosate, unfortunately, because they're a root. What happens is when they're sprayed, they absorb, they uptake the glyphosate into the roots very, very rapidly. That's why they're so heavily contaminated.
Ours are out of Germany.
That's the ones we get are out of Germany, non-GMO, clean as it can get, expensive for us to bring in, but really, really good. I mean, even half the box in German.
I mean, it's glass.
Glass. Gosh, they won't put in plastic. They won't. I mean, they're picky about it over there. Well, Germans have a tendency to do things really overboard when they do it.
And, that's kind of like the Porsche GTS.
The GT3RS, yeah.
You know, it's funny. I read an article you sent it to me. So I actually posted it on the websites while I'm reporting on
with
this.
The ZR1?
And they've got a car. You guys may have heard of it. It's a GT3RS.
The
Porsche. It's got like 520 horsepower. And there's this 12-mile loop over there called the Nürburgring.
Nürburgring.
And that's like the loop to break seven minutes on.
It's one of the oldest, most dangerous racetracks in the entire world. It's the gauntlet.
Niki Lauda back in 1976 was almost killed there when he was racing Hunt. And made a big movie about it, actually.
And multiple casualties on that track every year.
Oh, yeah. And so so that's the one that you have to, you know, break seven minutes. And it's funny, the GT3RS, as Germans like to make things so precise, has 520 horsepower. The new ZR1 has 1,000 and something horsepower.
1,068, I think.
And it couldn't beat the Porsche with twice the horsepower.
Missed it by a second.
Yeah.
And they put the ZR1X on there.
Yeah, it beat the Porsche by one, which has 1,350 horsepower approximately.
1,250.
12, whatever. And it beat the Porsche by 1/10 of 1 second with almost, you know, with more than two times the horsepower. So Germans like to make things real precise. Now, mind you, the biggest mistake they made in those Corvettes is they should have hired the track time setters. In other words, the people who knew that track are the ones who should have run those cars.
I talked to one of my buddies from the dealership last night, and he said they completely and totally just soiled themselves not putting a Porsche track driver in that ZR1.
Well, you got a guy who's run that track 1,000 times.
Plus.
And he's got the track record.
Been doing it his whole life.
Right? And then you put a guy who's never run the track before in a 1,200 horsepower car. Yeah. Give me a break.
Well, they ran it for an entire month.
Whoa,
they
had to run for a month to break 7 seconds.
Oh, we did it. We did it. 7 minutes. Yeah, no. But, I mean, it's a cool car.
That's so Germans cool. make really good beet crystals.
They do.
That was the segue. All right. Oh, by the way, Kennedy was on with Tucker Carlson. He's talking about vaccines and big money maker for pediatricians. And, wow, there's a big new debate going on now because the pediatricians suddenly somebody pulled their drawers down and put a big flashlight on them and says, what's really going on in there? you weirdos, what are you doing? And Kennedy basically said they're getting perverse incentives. And, I mean, this is pretty interesting. I was going to, you know, he goes, and then now the New York Times, of course, it's recently reported, the opposite is true, that vaccines are a money pit for doctors.
So, okay. I don't even believe you believe that.
And the Times Archer, this is so stupid. You know, it says Ryan, they're trying to go from both sides of the argument. Ryan Chaplin, that coordinates victim purchasing contracts for doctors. Or, I'm sorry, did you hear that, Freudian slip?
Yeah.
Do you hear what I said? I said victim purchasing contracts. It's vaccine purchasing contracts. I guess I saw a victim with the vaccine.
Yeah.
Told the vendor that the incentives for vaccinations are typically linked to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention childhood immunization schedule. Chaplin says that doctors get extra payments with a certain percentage of their patients. Typically, 80% or more take all of the vaccines on the schedule. The Times article, despite of criticism of Kennedy's perverse incentives comment, acknowledged that about half of pediatricians have value-based contracts with insurers.
Yep.
See, we don't make this stuff up here at Health Masters. An insurance reimbursement model that rewards providers with extra payments for hitting specific merits and metrics that are considered markers for the quality of care. According to Child Health Defense CEO Mary Holland, these types of incentives have completely distorted pediatric care in the United States. Period. That's an absolute true statement. In an interview with OAN News, Holland said, under this idea that vaccines are safe and effective and they help every child, a pediatrician with a large practice with thousands of children in it can earn hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in incentives. Really serious money. Just thought I'd
mention reported on this with Blue Cross Blue Shield. You guys are gonna
a
love
decade
this.
Ago.
This is pediatricianaap.org, volume 142, issue 4, October 2018. I'm not making this up. This is literally in pediatrics.org. General pediatricians and value-based payments. In an effort to transform the healthcare system, payers and physicians are experimenting with new payment models in an effort to move from a volume-based system to one based on value. They conduct a national survey to evaluate pediatricians' experiences with value-based models of payment. This incentivizes pediatricians to keep the vaccine rate at a certain percentage of all of their patients so they increase their bonuses. This is on pediatrics.org. This is why Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is bringing this up now. And, of course, the New York Times is trying to argue it. And it says here, in the experience, views vary, but of those surveyed, more than half the pediatricians reported receiving VBPs, which is value-based payments. Pediatricians reporting this experience are more likely to feel these payment models have a positive impact on patient care. Meaning over half the pediatricians they surveyed in 2018 were receiving payments for how many shots they administered.
Some of them hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. And it goes on to say, Chaplin, who runs a vaccine buying group that offers doctors a discount on vaccine purchases, told the defender that immunization is not particularly profitable for practices because there is a cost of producing and storing the vaccines. Right. However, Dr. Paul Thomas, who ran general pediatrics practice, has shown that it is very difficult for pediatricians to maintain a viable practice if they don't administer vaccines or close to the CDC schedule. But for pediatricians who follow the CDC recommendations, their practice can be quite profitable. Now, here's why. I'm going to stop for here on this. You've got to train the parents to bring the kids in.
That's exactly right.
You got a healthy child that you're bringing into the pediatrician to get a shot, they're going to charge you an administrative fee for the shot. They're going to charge you an office visit. So you've got to train that parent that every 4 to 6 months, you got to bring that kid in for more vaccines.
Pavlovian dog.
And so the parents say, oh, I got to take my child in for another shot, another shot, another shot, another shot, another shot. Well, cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. And so instead of, you know, taking that child to the doctor when it's sick, you take that child to the doctor when it's healthy, which massively increases the profit. So all of this BS that they're saying here about how they don't want to do it, it's not true. Thomas, the author of Vax Facts, wants to consider before what to consider before vaccinating at all ages and stages of life, said pediatric practices have high overhead costs, simply 60-80% of gross income, and would not survive without the income of vaccines and well baby visits, exactly what I just said, during which the vaccines are often administered. In his practice, for which for years 10 providers had over 15,000 patients, Thomas gives parents a choice to vaccinate after sharing their risks and benefits. Over time, he said more and more of his patients opt out of the vaccines, and he saw a substantial drop in profits. to understand how deviation from the schedule could affect the bottom line. Thomas and his administrative team analyzed his practice's financial and visit data for a month. They identified the administration fee loss, each vaccine recommended by the CDC but refused by parents. He explained the analysis in a short video. In other words, he wasn't making the money that he needed to make if they weren't doing the vaccines. He showed that when patients deviate from the schedule, losses exceed $1 million for a practice that bills approximately $3 million per year.
Whoa.
I'm going to read you the whole sentence. The results published in a 2021 peer-reviewed paper in the International Journal of Vaccine Theory, Practice, and Research, co-authored by Lyons Wheeler, showed that when patients deviate from the schedule, losses exceed $1 million for a practice that bills approximately $3 million per year. It becomes clear that financial incentives to vaccinated are now a matter of survival for pediatric practices, Thomas concluded. A big hidden thank you for vaccinating income. So Kennedy's right. Now think about this for a second. So you go into the child and you say, you know, I don't think I'm going to do this vaccine right now. That's why they go berserk.
That's exactly why they go berserk.
And if you're not going to vaccinate this child, we're not taking you as a patient. Why? Because they lose their incentive from Blue Cross or Blue Shield or other major insurers as far as the money they're going to be paid for more to 80% compliance. So they can't. And when they say that, they're not being mean. They're being,
they're being pretty greedy
because the point is they can't make money on their practice if they don't have a certain percentage doing it. They start losing money.
Here's the problem that I have with all of this is that pediatricians, you know, the first motto with anything with doctors is basically do no harm.
Yes, not the way these
No, and secondly, the pediatricians are supposed to be there to help kids stay healthy, right? That's the idea, or if they get sick, to get them better. Lana took Kendall, my youngest daughter, to a pediatrician years back during COVID because she was basically had a respiratory infection. It was probably COVID. She got over it after a week, but she was basically you could hear it in her lungs. We want to make sure she wouldn't get pneumonia, and we didn't have a normal pediatrician, so we went to a pediatrician. It was 2021, 2022, and she took her in. Of course, the first thing the doctor does, first thing right out of the gate, doesn't care about her breathing, doesn't care about her lungs. What's her full vaccination schedule? Lana goes, oh, she hasn't had any vaccines. We need her up to date immediately. Lana goes, I'm here. Can we talk about the issue we're having right now with her lungs? Well, yeah, we need to go ahead and get the vaccines ready. Lana goes, no, we're not doing any vaccines. We're opting out of vaccines. Doctor goes, well, I'm not going to see you then. I'll check her right now. I will no longer see you as a patient. Dude, I literally got heated and threw them out. Said, I'll see her right now. Charged like $100 for a two-minute visit, which I told Lana not to pay on the phone. I would deal with it later, negotiate with him, which I did. And then said, we will not see her again unless she is up to date and fully vaccinated. When you get pediatricians like this, they're complete and totally pieces of crap. They are. And they know exactly who they are. So I had a long discussion with them. They don't care about the child's health. They don't care about treating the child. They don't care about producing positive results. The only thing they want to do is get their shot schedule up to the percentage rate so they get their multi-$100,000 bonus every year. That's a serious problem in the medical industry when it comes to children's health.
Here's the biggest problem I have. I'm going to step it back a notch. I'm going back to Florida State. I'm going back to when I was in the pre-med program. And I remember I was taking a physiological psychology class. And I was like leading the class, you know, I was getting an A in the course. And we were training rats.
Yeah.
We had our own little pet rat. And I was way ahead of everybody. I'm really good with animals. And the way you did it is you'd take the water jug off the rat and for a day, and he'd be thirsty, and then he'd do whatever you wanted him to do, and you'd give him the water back. Okay? And so what they did, I had my name on this rat cage, and I ended up basically having somebody put a water bottle on the rat 24/7 that always put it back on because it was me. And so I went to the TA, the teacher's assistant. I said, what the heck am I going to do with this? They said, change the name on your rat, but don't take your name off, put somebody else's name on it. And I said, they're competing against you, and they don't want you to get an A.
Wow.
They don't want you to, you know, get into the medical program or whatever you want to do for graduate school, so they're competing against you. And I said, what? He goes, yeah. So I changed the name and never had another problem. Okay.
That's wild.
No. And then my sister, you know, when she was in organic chemistry, they would contaminate each other's pipettes when they were trying to get analysis on it. And they would do it on purpose so that they could basically compete. Now, not all doctors and not all med students are like this. Let me qualify that. They're not all like this. But a lot of them are really, really greedy people.
Yeah.
And they want to compete against other doctors, and they want to basically be at the country club hitting golf balls at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, talking about how much money they made and, you know, and what their practice is doing, et cetera, et cetera. Pediatrics has never been a very lucrative practice until they started the vaccines. It never has, because you're helping kids, you know, and a lot of parents can't afford to pay very much, and so you're really in it, or used to be really in it because of the money that you, not because of the money,
because you want the kids to help them,
stay healthy. Well, that all changed when they started this vaccine schedule back in the 80s.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they say, well, I mean, I get this vaccine, I get an extra $100,000 a year. Yeah. Wow, okay, I make some money.
Yeah.
When I was viciously attacked back in the 80s by a pediatrician, in fact, his name was Dr. Henry Redd. He's passed on now. Hope and praise in heaven. And he ended up getting convicted for running a Ponzi scheme with his wife, Alice Faye Redd.
Yep.
Okay. This is all, but I was attacked. I was put into a room at Carpenter's Home Church that has now been torn down. The whole church is gone, into the green room. And I basically got chewed out because I started talking. I was talking on the radio about health and about how your diet directly affected your health and how you need to keep your bowels clean and all the rest of this stuff. And I got lit into. He was a pediatrician.
Yeah, there you go.
So I have a special place in my heart for pediatricians because that happened. And I'm not saying that all pediatricians are like that, because they're not. There's some really good
pediatricians. There are. There are a couple. We found a good one now.
That really, really cares about kids. Like this one guy in here, he says he started giving these people choices, and he found out if they billed $3 million a year, they dropped $1 million in income off of that if he started giving the parents choices, because he would tell them the truth about the vaccines. Now, that's a good pediatrician, because he's taking $1 million a year income hit because he's telling people the truth. Now, the sad part about it is a lot of people get so brainwashed by this that they believe everything the pediatrician says.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they believe that he's God, pseudo-God with a little g, because he holds the power of life and death over the child. A lot of people look at doctors like that. They give them more credence, they give them more than they really deserve, because you know they have the white lab coat on, which is their clerical gown. They're wearing their stethoscope, which is their crucifix. This is a book by Dr. Mendelsohn called Confessions of a Medical Heretic you need to read. He was a pediatrician, by the way. And what ends up happening is he wrote another book, How to Have a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Pediatrician. And he was a pediatrician.
Well, what happens is, because it's so emotional-based, you got a kid that's sick and you're a parent. You know, oh my gosh, my kid's sick. What do I do? So they take him to the pediatrician. The pediatrician goes, oh, this, and this. What happens is, then the parents start associating that, oh my gosh, the pediatrician saved my child's life.
Well, they can't possibly believe that the pediatrician is going to administer a vaccine that's going to increase the risk of autism.
That's a hard pill to swallow.
They can't believe it. They don't believe that pediatrician knowingly would do this.
Normalcy bias, maybe.
No, I remember I had a kid one time in the gym with us, and a great kid. I helped raise him. And I remember he basically told us he was not going to vaccinate his little boy. And he's actually great. I sent like 50 articles to read. And then I'm in the gym with him one day with Austin. Austin's in there, and he says, well, I asked him, he's not vaccinated, right? He goes, oh, no, I'm vaccinating. Full vaccination schedule. And he goes, well, he said, the pediatrician won't take him if I don't do this. And I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. So I said, well, go to another doctor. He goes, well, the insurance will cover the other doctor. And I said to him, and Austin will confess, I tell you I'm right about this. I said, I will pay for you to go for another doctor. Remember that, Austin?
Yep.
I said, I will pay for it. I will pay for your doctor's visits. I said, go someplace where you don't have to do this. And then finally he said to me, he says, well, I really believe that, you know, if my child comes down with autism, it's God's will. That's providentialism, by the way. And it basically it was disastrous. And the child ended up coming down with autism. And you think, well, that's horrible. Now they don't vaccinate at all. A little late for that child, right? And the sad part about all of this stuff is that when you try to tell people the truth, and you try to tell them that there's like 1 in 25 chance now of them having a child that's going to have some type of mental disorder because of vaccines. That's like having a wall switch, 25 wall switches. So go flip a switch. 25. Yeah. One of those switches is going to basically make your child autistic. Have fun. And you're like, well, that's awful. You're being sent. No. The reality is I don't think it's 1 in 25. I think it's like 1 in 10. Because not all these kids get autism.
Well, but the degree of autism affects
that. No, that's because they're, quote, now on the spectrum.
Right.
Okay. And the problem with that is that they have a heavy metal toxicity developing from 76 vaccines, from all that aluminum. At least they just took the thimerosal out of the shot they give a woman who's having a baby, you know, for hepatitis. It's ridiculous. They assume that they have to give that child a shot because the mother has, you know, hepatitis and she's a drug using prostitute. Yeah, that's where that came from, if you want to know. So always say absolutely not, no hepatitis vaccine. And plus, the child can't even make proper antibodies until they're about 24 months old. So the first 2 years of vaccines have nothing to do with antibody production. It has to do with you getting into your pediatric office, you know, enough to basically condition yourself to be a lifelong pediatric patient with that child. Yep. Until that child's 18, they go to the regular doctor.
Well, and that's why I want to cover this article here now. It says vaccination rates are dropping among kindergarten as exemptions increase. According to the CDC, it said around 3.6% of kindergartners in the most recent school year across the country received exemptions from vaccine requirements now. 3.6% is up massively from what it used to be.
You know what did this, don't you? COVID shots.
Oh, yeah.
The COVID. All of a sudden, all these people started getting COVID shots, started having myocarditis and pericarditis and all these health issues. They're like, what the heck? If this vaccine's not safe.
That's exactly right.
Maybe they're all not safe.
Well, and that's the problem. They played with the COVID shot as so many people started seeing what was happening with it. And all of a sudden, people that had even an inkling of cognitive functioning go, they told us this was safe and effective. This shots, everybody needs to get it. Everybody needs to get the shot. It's safe and effective. But it wasn't safe and it wasn't effective and it didn't do anything positive. And now all of a sudden everybody goes, like you said, well, if this shot's this bad, what about the other shots?
The 76
scheduled shots. So again, something to be aware of. I want to cover this because a lot of people are starting to wake up now and really start to question what this entire narrative is about, especially when you have the American Academy of Pediatrics calling for an end of exemptions for acquired vaccines. So the AAP, I talked about this briefly yesterday, they want to eliminate all non-medical exemptions from immunizations across the country, which I don't think they can do. They're trying to do this from an AAP policy statement, medical exemption of vaccine mandates, which are in place in all 50 states through the CDC. Remember, the thing that a lot of people failed to realize, and I think people understood it after COVID, a mandate is not a law. It is not a congressionally approved law that's gone into place as United States law. It's just that. It's a mandate from some clowns that were not elected. They were selected to be on a committee or a panel in an agency. And suddenly they come in and say, we deem it so. We mandated that everyone in the country has to wear a mask. And you go, well, where's the congressional law showing that? Where's the statute? It doesn't matter. We've been selected on this committee, and we're mandating it.
Goes back to the Chevron doctrine.
Exactly right. Also, the CDC goes, we know it's best for everyone. We know that masks are safe and effective, so everybody has to wear a mask. I'm sorry, but the last time I checked, a mandate is not a law, and that is not something I'm required to follow at any point in time in a constitutional republic. And this is what happened when you see so many people were getting into arguments over masks. In that movie, Eddington, I watched the other day, it was wild. There's a scene that it displayed with that with the doggone grocery store and them kicking people out because they weren't wearing masks. Movie was almost too soon, to be honest with you, but it was very interesting because you watch it again, you're like, God, I feel like I'm back in COVID again watching this. But when you start seeing this stuff, you've got to understand these individuals in most of these areas, they're not elected. They're there to use the Chevron doctrine against you to push their policies.
Yeah, we're supposed to be done with the Chevron doctrine. I don't know why they're so
pulling.
Well,
the EPA just got yanked back. You saw that one. It was emission stuff now.
I want to read you just one more paragraph on this.
Yep.
The most substantial financial incentive comes from the value-based care incentives, yep, which tie payments to meeting benchmarks. These benchmarks may vary by insurance provider, but Thomas said a typical requirement would be 80% of patients being fully vaccinated by the age of two. He estimated that bonuses typically add up to 100,000 or more per year per physician. A large practice that does a good job vaccinating and following the CDC schedule is likely to get over $500,000 a year.
That's a chunk of cash, dude.
Just from the new cohort of newborns that enters the practice that year, not including the other kids. Thomas' research showed that the other major source of income for pediatricians is well baby visits during the first 6 months of life.
Yep.
Just what we just told you. Today, with many children visiting urgent care for acute illnesses, vaccination and well baby visits have become a key survival for more pediatric practices, he said. Wow. Now, think about that for a second. It's so funny. The reason we're spending so much time on this today, I know we're being repetitive about this, is that we have told you this very same thing for 10 years.
Yep.
And so many people, oh, that's not true. Blah, 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 blah. I always get that stuff. And so I want to let you see now that we weren't blowing smoke here. We were telling you guys the truth about this. That's why you've got to ask yourself a question. Who is incentivized to do this?
Yes.
Follow the money as always. Very, very important. Also, what's your next story?
This is an interesting health story on the topic of iron. I don't bring this up very often. One of the reasons why, especially for men, you're not taking a lot of additional iron. It says when iron becomes too much of a good thing, goes into detail here about the need and requirement for iron, but it says an estimated 16 million people who have some degree of iron overload. The most common cause of inherited condition is which causes the absorption of more iron than normal and leading to accumulation deposits in various organs. And so it's an interesting topic about this. I'm going to post this on the website because I know a lot of times females need more iron than men, especially during menstrual cycles. Men don't need a lot of iron. That's why we have the ultimate multiple powder without iron. And I remember usually when I go donate blood about once a year, they always have to do an iron test, and it can't be over 20. If it goes over 20, they actually will not, they will not let you donate blood. You got to have your prescription. They actually have to have a doctor sign off for you to donate blood. Your blood starts getting so thick they cannot use it to give to anybody for your iron.
I did not know that.
I learned that too one time because my iron was high. My iron was like 18 one time when I donated, and I'd been eating a copious amount of bison that month, and I cut back on that, and my iron's in a great range now. But it's, again, another reason why. Really important to do blood work, really important to maintain your overall health and taking the right supplements. And getting blood work done really gives you that balance once a year to see where everything's at, how your hormones are doing, how your iron, your D3, everything's doing. So I always recommend doing that because you can't have a target. You can't see it.
That's right. Berlin. I'm gonna pick on Germany for a minute.
Oh, what's Germany doing now?
Well, now we always get
Deutschland. Yeah,
Berlin's special visa program for Syrians and Afghan and Iraqis are scrapped after federalists.
They get tired of it.
For over a year, Berlin's coalition government has been divided over the program, which was introduced by the previous left-wing, highly communist administration. Yeah. The scheme enables residents to bring close relatives to the city-state, provided they personally cover the cost of health and long-term care insurance. The SPD supports continuing the initiative, while the CDU remains firmly opposed. Germany has found that basically these people are coming in and not abiding to these rules and making Germany pay for everything. And what's happened is they've said that they no longer wish to bring them in because they refuse to assimilate.
They do. They do. They don't do anything there.
Now I'm going to pick on the United States.
Okay.
Now I'm going to pick on our Hispanic friends, which we have a lot of listeners that are Hispanic. I love you guys. But when people come to this country and they refuse to learn English,
it's annoying.
It's annoying.
It really is annoying.
I'm not picking on you. I know you got over here for free or got in here for free or came over here legally or whatever it is. You know, maybe you don't need to fly the Puerto Rican flag. Just maybe. I'm just letting you know. Maybe you don't need to fly the Mexican flag.
Then you fly the American flag. We live in America.
This is going to be our equal offending show today. We're going to just piss everybody off on this one today. So we have all of these people from other countries that refuse to assimilate, creating a Tower of Babel effect in the United States and decreasing our ability to have a unified America.
That's a fact. Well said.
I mean, that's the bottom line on it. Yesterday I watched an NFL game.
Yeah.
Just not the game itself, but him singing the Star Spangled Banner.
I heard something about that.
Oh, he got eviscerated for this.
Did he?
Oh, my God.
Why? What happened?
Because he was an alpha male.
Oh, okay.
And he sang an acapella, and he did a phenomenal job. It got everybody mad. I guess the DEI incentives didn't pay attention. I mean, I thought the guy, in fact, I posted it so you guys could read it or listen to it. But he did. I mean, he was phenomenal. He was really good. But boy, did he take the hit. Why? Because we no longer have a unified America.
That's exactly right.
If you want to defeat a country, you break it up into segments.
Yep.
If you want to break up a fighting force into segments, they're no longer fighting as a cohesive unit.
That's exactly right.
You know, you separate them over here, and you separate them over here. I was watching that one movie the other day. It was one of those ancient Roman ones. I remember they wanted to break up the guys that the barbarians were attacking. Yeah. And they said, well, we're going to drop over here. We're going to put this group of, you know, this fire over here. We're separating yep. Every part. And pretty soon they were able to pick them off.
Yep.
Because they couldn't retreat because there was fire behind them.
Well, and that's what the United States military, really, you know, the Marines, the Army, all the infantry, is that you always have like a four-man fire team at minimum.
Yeah.
That when you have a group of individuals that are cohesive, they're a unit, they fight together, they have each other's back.
You saw that one. That movie was Last Survivor was like that. They had a fire team.
Yeah, exactly.
That, by the way, don't.
That's a great movie.
That's a great movie, but it's not for kids. It is really
the whole Rambo ideology doesn't work in most cases. It's very difficult to do. I mean, you can't survive.
You can't cover your back.
Exactly. You don't have eyes in the back of your head, and that's what they've wanted to do. The United States is they split everybody up into these tiny little pie slices now. So there's no national unity. There is no national pride. That's why they got so mad the first time when Trump got elected. His first time, because Brent kept talking about national unity, make America great again, make
nationalism.
Nationalism. And everybody hated it from the left, because what it was doing was it was bringing back a group of people. And then what they've done now is they've eviscerated anybody that's remotely been supportive of national unity in the United States now. And they go, oh, the January 6th insurrection. And it, you see how they do this stuff.
It's horrible.
You know, how many firearms are confiscated at that insurrection? I'll wait.
I'm still waiting.
It was a big, fast zero.
Yeah.
If it was an insurrection, that was the most pathetic insurrection in world history. Not one single weapon or firearm was confiscated. Really? Come on, guys.
They walked onto the Capitol grass. They walked into the building. Where the police opened the doors.
We had over 50 FBI agent provocateurs involved that had been admitted now, getting involved in stuff, incentivizing, encouraging, helping people break into stuff with earpieces in, with face masks on. We've seen all the on it now. Did some people do some really stupid stuff there? Yeah. Did some people do some really stupid stuff all the time? Yeah. Oh, but I guess we're just going to forget about the Antifa riots and the BLM riots and all the other agencies that got together to feed those groups so they could cause more and more problems across the country, including fire burning over 140 cities with those terrorist agents with BLM and Antifa. We're going to ignore all that.
And let's ignore the fact of what the Capitol Police did in the tunnels.
Yeah.
Where there were no cameras.
Yeah.
How these protesters were beaten.
Yeah.
I'm going to ignore all that, too. Oh, by the way, more different topic.
This show's pissing everybody off.
Everybody's mad now. We might as well just go full fireside piss-off chat today. Excuse my language.
That's good.
Okay. But just to show you that we're going to pick on another country, Ukraine adopts new anti-corruption laws.
Oh.
and Zelensky quickly reverses. They vetoed it after the purse strings were threatened. Oh, the Zelensky government suffered a black eye this month, even from the perspective of Western backers, and the Ukrainian leader has been forced to retreat under pressure. Their parliament approved legislation Thursday, restoring the independence of the country's two main government anti-corruption bodies, a move demanded by Kiev's international partners, as well as tens of thousands of engaged Ukrainians who protested on the streets of the capital and other cities. With a majority of 226 to pass, a total of 331 deputies voted in favor in what Washington Post further calls a stunning about face by the same lawmakers who just last week had supported the previous law undermining agencies. The Zelensky government clearly wanted to show and single Western allies and its biggest monetary backers it was willing to snap to and quickly reform. This is also seen as a fact that the particular vote was the first one to be live streamed since they live streamed it. That was a mistake they made.
Yeah, they did.
That way they couldn't cover it up.
Cut it.
Now, after his humiliation to the court and public opinion, Zelensky is singing to a very, very different tune and seeking to present himself as a champion of transparency and anti-corruption. And, of course, he says, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to have this any longer. So, yeah, I mean, this is a guy who likes to dance around naked playing the piano. So he's one of those guys. I mean, honestly, no offense to this guy. Yeah, I'm going to offend
him. I will offend him.
The guy's sitting around naked and takes his appendage and plays the piano with it. And puts it on videotape. Now, he knew he was being videotaped.
Well, he was a comedian. You got to remember. Zelensky's like Biden.
Yeah, but
he's not making any decisions over there.
But it's not even that.
BlackRock's making decisions over there.
It's like, you know, you're sitting here and somebody tells you to get naked. And you go, well, I don't really want to be naked. Well, we're going to have videotape this. I don't really want to do this. Oh, sure, let's go get naked. Okay, now we want you to go ahead and use your appendage and play the piano. We're going to videotape you so we can show it for posterity. How about just say no?
Dude, he was a clown. He was a circus actor. He was a jester. Do you think he's doing anything over there? He's the person they put on the screen they blame all this stuff on, just like Biden. BlackRock's running there. Lockheed Martin and Raytheon are running Ukraine.
And then they say, by the way, we're going to bring a bunch of gay boys over here.
Oh, gosh, that was...
We're going to dress you guys up in leathers and high heels.
That one's even worse than the piano. The piano's pretty bad. That one was as bad as it gets.
And so we're going to put you in leathers and high heels. We're going to have you dance with the gay boys. What do you think? How about no? How about I don't think I'm going to do that? How about no, we're not going to save this for posterity? How about this is going to be really weird 10 years down the road? I don't want to do this.
He's a court jester, man. He don't care. He's getting a paycheck. He's just getting a paycheck. It's just a job to him. He's a clown. This is wild here now. Google rolls out Gemini Deep Think AI reasoning model that tests multiple ideas on a long parallel scale. This is wild. This is where AI is going. This is where predictions predictive modeling for pre-crime is also going to be used, by the way. You guys are going to find this to be interesting. This is some wild stuff. Google DeepMind just rolled out Gemini 2.5 DeepThink. The company says it is the most advanced AI reasoning model in history, able to answer questions by exploring and considering multiple ideas simultaneously and then using those outputs to choose the best answer. And so what it's doing is you type in an answer and you go, okay, what are the possible scenarios on a one-year-long time scale if I do this? And what are the possible decisions I can make on each of these time scales? And what are the predictive modeling on each of those time scales if anything changes? And it gives you like 500 possible scenarios and outcomes. This is wild. Normal AI, ChatGPT, can answer stuff within seconds. This takes hours to compute, hours to put a program together. This also, it talks about it here in another article. I don't have it in front of me with this one, but it goes into detail how this is going to be used with Palantir, with pre-crime predictive modeling, and a threat score. So it's going to look at an individual. It's going to look at your entire digital footprint, what you do, where you go, what you look at, what you buy, what you go, every single thing. And then it's going to give five different long enough time scales. And this time scale, this is a possible scenario that this guy does this at this year with these scenarios. Okay, he's getting a threat assessment of 9 now because he's a possible threat to the United States. That's where this is going with this modeling. This is why they're building AI data centers all across the country. This is why they're rolling this stuff out. This is a $250 a month subscription to have Gemini 2.5, by the way. $250 a month.
We're going to go back to Genesis 6.
Oh, gosh.
It always goes back to Genesis 6, in which every thought of every man was evil all of the time. Okay. Now, remember, Lucifer is not omnipresent. He's not omniscient. He's not omnipotent. He's a being. He's an angel. He's not God. And the problem is he wants to be able to control the fractal timeline. Here we go, Austin.
There you go.
What they're mentioning here, what they're talking about, is a fractal timeline.
Yes, that's exactly
okay.
What it is.
But they're not saying that. I'm gonna make it real simple here. Let's say right now I'm live on a podcast. I can sit here and I can make funny faces at you. I can jump up on the table if it doesn't break. I could sling my iPad across the room. Heck, I could dance up on the table and do a little jig.
I fit food at you.
Yeah, we do anything.
Yeah.
Those are all fractal timelines. Those are possible possibilities from an infinite standpoint.
Yeah.
That's what this is talking about.
Yeah.
To determine fractal timelines of what the possibilities are. See, what happens is when we get born, by the time we're 50 or 60 years old, we've had about a dozen crossroad decisions that are really important.
Right.
You know, if I'm going to do drugs.
Yeah.
If I'm going to work out. If I'm going to eat clean. If I'm going to go to college. Who I'm going to marry.
Yeah.
If I'm going to have kids. You know, there's certain timelines. Major decisions that you've got to make. When you come to a road, you got to go right or you got to go left, and you got to pick. And if you don't pick the right way, it takes a while to get back to the right timeline. That's what this is doing. It's picking variable timelines in a fractal universe. And it's saying to yourself, oh, here are the 500 possibilities.
Right. What happens, right? So scenario, what happens if I sit here and I got a purple stick, and give me a center camera, Rich, and I sling it off the table, and it opens up and they go everywhere. I've got to clean that up later.
Yeah.
That's a possible scenario that can happen that I just did. This gives you like 500 different scenarios with one single decision.
I was with your kids again last night. It was great.
Oh, yeah.
And they only ever want to watch is Avengers.
Oh,
I mean, I've watched Avengers now until I'm like, oh, God.
The first ones were good. The end, I don't like the final.
Well, no, listen to this, though. But this Professor Strange,
yeah.
Right? He's sitting there and he's going into some kind of phase and he starts fluctuating. And he goes, I just analyzed 14 million possible timelines.
There you go.
That's what they're talking about here. And he goes, there's only one that works.
Yeah.
You know, that's why they did what they did. That's what God is able to do without this computer, but Lucifer can't do this without this computer.
Yeah.
Are you listening to me?
Wow.
This is what this is all about. This is about allowing Lucifer to control fractal timelines. That's what they're doing here. They already did all this in Genesis 6.
See, what they're doing is they're proposing this stuff as business models. Because I have to admit, this would be amazing on a predictive modeling for business. What if I do this? What are the possible outcomes of my business next 4 months, 6 months, 12 months? It's great. The problem with this is it's not going to stop with business. This stuff isn't going to be selective at just that. They're rolling this out to put in every single aspect of software and every digital device eventually by 2030, 2035. On a long enough time scale, that's where this stuff goes. And it starts modeling and predicting what you're going to do before you're going to do it.
And it doesn't predict it. It directs it.
Ah, there you go.
See the difference?
There you go.
They're not. They're telling you what to do here with 500 possible scenarios.
They're putting the ideas.
They're putting the ideas into your mind.
Whoa.
Where every thought was evil all the time. Let's tick you, tick you, tick you, tick you, tick you, tick you until every thought's evil all the time.
How do we get him to this select endpoint? This is how you do it. This is what you plan. Remember that movie? It's kind of weird. Inception.
Oh yeah.
You plant an idea in somebody's mind and you water the idea. Yeah, and you can make anybody think or do something eventually on a long enough time scale with just an idea.
And, you know, Gemini 2.5 deep think. In other words, what it's doing is it's analyzing your fractal possible timelines to direct you to the possible place where they want you to go, where every thought is evil all of the
where
time.
Where they want you to be.
Now, remember, this won't take a week, a month. It's going to take 100 years, 200 years. People are always saying, you think the end time is here? Do you think Jesus is about to come back? No, it's not bad enough yet. When this gets involved, and this gets implemented, and everybody's being directed and guided, because you won't be able to think anymore.
Well, no,
it's going to think for you.
It's going to be the, well, it's going to do. It's going to, they're going to roll it into the 5G, 6G. Now, remember, I told you 6G, where they want to roll in. They want the augmented virtual reality goggles, glasses, phones that you can use your phone. Then they want to have the lens they said put over your eye. You don't have to wear anything anymore. You should scroll your phone and do things. Then they start implementing all this stuff to get you down that line.
And all of a sudden, your AI program, your artificial intelligence program that's directing the course of your life in your little Google glasses.
You don't even realize
and you don't even realize what just happened. Now you're in some horrible place that you don't want to be. And you're like, how did I get here? Well, you were directed there. You were trained to go there like a Pavlovian lab rat.
Well, and this is why they've done so much with the predictive modeling with the advertisement for the pharmaceutical drugs.
That's exactly
right. You're sitting there watching TV. Drooling on yourself, eating your MSG Doritos and your diet soda. I don't do that, but some people do
IV of fluoride.
IV of fluoride. All of a sudden, oh, butterflies. Oh, they look happy. Oh, I need to talk to my doctor about this drug because I have restless leg syndrome and I could be way happier if I was on that drug.
Try magnesium.
That fat. But no, yeah, magnesium brain food. Yeah, throw some magnesium. That wasn't fun. I didn't want to clean that one up too. But no, that's where it is. And so they start implementing and putting these little ideas in everybody's mind. And sure enough, long enough time scale, you're on 10 different prescription drugs and you don't even know why you're on.
I've seen 25. Oh, by the way, Joe Rogan did it again. He brought a guy basically on his show that basically is a Nazi-obsessed amateur historian. And now he's at the top of Substack. I got a kick out of this.
Joe Rogan with some wild guests.
Well, yeah. With the problem is some guy named Noah Leonard, this Jewish fella, wrote this article about this guy who's talking about history from an alternative standpoint. And, of course, now he's a Nazi sympathizer.
When all else fails, you got to roll the Nazis out.
Well, he brings in Kristallnacht.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Kristallnacht is when a bunch of synagogues were burned, and they went into a lot of Jewish shops, and they broke into the windows, and they stole their stuff, which actually happened, by the way. That's just history. And my mom was there for that. Now, she wasn't involved in all that, but she saw it. And the crazy part about it is that, you know, when Hitler found out about it, he went ballistic. He said, stop it.
Stop it.
This is awful propaganda. We can't be doing this.
Everybody's getting mad.
And so they tried to make Hitler as the one who caused all of this stuff. And so what happens is this Nazi-obsessed amateur historian went in and said, you know, Hitler didn't want to do that because it's too bad. The publicity is too bad for that. And he told him to stop it. And so, oh, gosh, oh, he's wrong. Because here's the thing. I'm not, going to make a bunch of excuses for Hitler. I'm not going to do all that. But the reality is not everything he did was bad, but not everything he did was good. Some things were horrible.
And not all the Germans want to be in that war either.
No,
some of the stories Boma used to tell me over there.
Yeah, and then he says basically that, that Churchill was the one who precipitated and kept the war going and going and going. And he was. And the problem with that, Churchill was a druid, which he doesn't talk about. That's not a good thing, by the way. And Churchill is the one, in my opinion, wanted a blood sacrifice for the bombing of Dresden.
Yeah.
And so don't sit here and tell me that a revisionist is a person who comes in and tells you history that's not correct. But when you have the victors, they write the history books.
That's exactly right.
And
look
with
the Civil War.
And with Simon and Schuster, I can't do this.
It's Friday, bro. Send it.
And when Simon and Schuster writing history books, they have a tendency to be skewed. And, it's like Noah here is going to have a tendency to be skewed.
You're telling me that Mr. Rosenbaum that wrote the story about World War II isn't accurate?
I'm saying everybody has a slanted opinion on certain things.
On this show.
Oh, gosh, this show's going to be.
Oh, man.
By the way, I took GHI a few minutes, and that's probably why I'm so geeked up. And I took a purple stick mixed in with you guys. So you guys saw me drink it. So, but it's just, it's interesting. So, by the way, it's T-Day now. It's all these different, you know, tariffs are setting in now.
Oh, boy.
And so we're going to have interesting. Germany's getting a 15% tariff across the board now. And so your Mercedes that you want to buy that you like, or your Porsche that you want to buy that you like, is going to jump up about 15% overnight.
Ooh.
And those cars are expensive to start
they're
with.
They're already talking. I pulled this article up here earlier. They're already saying their sales forecast. They're slashing sales forecast for the European auto market. So great for Corvettes and other sports cars in the United States. That'd be good for them for the values on them to hold strong. But the United States, as far as vehicles made here, that was the goal of it. But as far as the European vehicles, and two, the EV demand is massively going to decrease because those EV cars that Europe brings in, they're really expensive. They depreciate really fast. The
Taycan. $220,000 1 year later is worth $80,000 if you get rid of it. If they'll take it,
that's the problem. And now we're losing all the subsidies.
You know what's funny? You know you bring a Taycan in for trade.
Yeah.
And you pull up to the dealership, and it's filled with salespeople. As soon as you know where this is going, and as soon as they see you pull up, it's like,
rah!
And they
like
run,
cats.
And they all and they scatter like. And you go inside, and it's like crickets.
Hey, hello.
You hear a voice from the top. No one's here right now. Come back later.
We're closed. It's 3 p.m., bro. Yeah, we're busy.
Yeah, we're all tied up. Just bring that to combat later. When nobody's here. We'll talk to you. In fact, go down to Chevrolet and trade it in. They're going to give you 20 grand for it. Bye. Oh, my gosh. Oh, by the way, Disney now is dealing with Julie Orman lawsuit, and apparently they've given her a bunch of money because they put her into a doggone meeting that ended up getting her raped, apparently.
Whoa.
And they knew that it was going to be dangerous with Harvey Weinstein, and they sent her in anyhow. And I got to give her credit, man. She's followed through with this thing, and she is basically going in now and has got a big chunk of cash out of them.
Imagine that. Disney set somebody up.
Wow. In fact, Disney forks out a staggering sum to the star actress over a vile sex attack claims, and she could be the first of dozens because of what happened with Disney and Weinstein. So I thought that was interesting.
Weinstein was such a piece of crap.
Oh, thank God. Somebody needs to take him out back and put a beating on him, boy. By the way, inside Trump's massive new 90,000 square foot makeover to modernize the White House, it will change the building forever.
He would do that.
Yeah. Can't say it's a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea.
It's not much to it, really. It'll be a great legacy project, and I think it'll be special, the president said on Thursday. White House Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt announced during a briefing that the construction will begin in September on a 90,000-square-foot addition to the East Wing that will include Trump's long-sought-after $200 million ballroom. You know, I'd rather have them do that than give money to Ukraine.
Well, yeah. At least it's something that's going to be going on for generations. Now, I wonder. Now, here's the million-dollar question. Big question. I've got a great question here. I wonder if they're going to make everything connected to the Internet of Things and the AI and the new platform, make it all smart grid.
I doubt they're going to do that because they don't want those conversations being recorded.
They don't want everybody to hear what's going on over there.
Yeah, so I've seen pictures of it here. It's actually really, really, really pretty. Apparently, Obama wanted to do something similar.
We've given, $180 billion to Ukraine. I mean, we might as well do a new ballroom in the White House.
There's a picture over here. It's really gorgeous. I mean, it's all white. With gold. It'd be nice, you know, especially when you have a diplomatic dinner and you invite a bunch of different countries and their top leaders over here. You might as well be able to really show it off. You know, and if we've got the money to give away to all these other countries, like $87 million, what is it, a day to Israel or something.
Don't even start on that.
If we've got the money to do this, why don't we just go ahead and spend the $100 million on this ballroom and really make something nice? And I guess it's probably from the Mar-a-Lago stuff that he has down there. Because I hear that place is – I've never been there, but I hear it's really, really nice.
I got a commercial. I'll try to pull the video up of it. I want to see this whole platform.
Are you talking about the new ballroom?
Yeah.
Yeah. You going to show it?
Yeah.
Yeah, there it is. Okay. Really 90,000 square feet. Look at this. It's going to be really pretty right here.
Yeah.
It's really pretty. It's going to change the landscape. Look at that. Isn't that pretty? That's beautiful to me. It looks something like something you see in Versailles. It looks like the Palace of Versailles.
Yeah,
woodwork, that's a lot of woodwork.
I mean, if we're burning cash, we might as well at least burn cash on something that's going to last. I mean, seriously.
If they're holding a gun to our head for taxes, we might as well get something that's pretty for us if we ever want to go get a tour.
I wouldn't mind touring that, exactly.
So,
anyways.
We're done with that. Oh, by the way, now they're talking about how Holly, this girl up who got knocked out by a black mob, and Cincinnati's leftist officials blamed her. The girl who got beaten unconscious, Meet Holly, the woman brutally knocked unconscious and beaten by in the street by a black mob during a last. Now we're offending blacks. All blacks are not bad. All whites are not bad. All Hispanics are not bad. Basically,
these guys were trash.
These guys
though.
Are trash. Here's Holly laying out in curb stop. Let's just see her now. She is black and blue, boy. According to the council member Victoria Parks, Holly and the other individual attacked, a white male begged for that beatdown.
Excuse me?
Okay, let's start.
I watched the entirety of the video.
According to council member Victoria Parks, hardcore liberal leftist nightmare from the pit of perdition, Holly and the other individual attacked was a white male. Begged! They begged for that beatdown. Now, they said, this article says, let that sink in.
Wow.
And it goes, they didn't have to do them like that. He was obviously drunk. They begged for that beatdown. I'm grateful for the whole story. And I go, well, boy, you're a city councilor. You make a statement like this? Unbelievable. The city's own leadership has defended the mob, not the victims. Even Police Chief Teresa TG, I can't pronounce her name, TG, downplayed the attack. The message from Cincinnati's woke leadership is loud and clear. Lawlessness is tolerated and victims are to be blamed. Senator Bernie Moreno, Republican, Ohio, first released the shocking images of Holly on X, wrote, this is Holly. She wanted to have a nice evening out with her friends. Instead, she got beat down. She got this. Holly gave me permission to release a photo so the others will never suffer what she did. Cincinnati is an amazing and spectacular city. It deserves political leadership that matches the greatness of its citizens. You know, if this garbage persists, federal funding must be cut. The group should face hate crime charges. A mob of blacks brutally attack a white man and a woman at a Cincinnati jazz festival. Such savage behavior is increasingly nationwide, yet the mainstream media ignores it. And you know the thing, let's stop for a second. Let's go ahead and hack off the gays now, too, while we're at this. If we had a group of gays get beat down like this, God forbid that, okay? I wouldn't wish this on anybody. Everybody would say, this is a hate crime.
Yeah.
You're all going to jail. You beat down the gays. If we had a group of blacks get beat down like this by a bunch of white boys, everybody say, this is a race-inspired hate crime. You guys are going to prison. You're all felonies. But these black guys beat down these two white people. Well, they were asking for it. They were begging for this. What kind of garbage is this? Where in the world is the leadership in Cincinnati? And why in the world can't these people be voted out?
It's right in the middle here. And I mean, this after they both got the crap beat out of for about a minute. They get back up finally. Then the girl's standing there pushing this other guy back. She already got hit, gets sucker punched. This guy comes right in, bam.
Boom, hit him again.
Just knocks her out. After she already got up off the ground. The thing was horrific. I mean, as far as they didn't have anybody watching their back. But at the end of the day.
Well, now I'm going to say something here, and I'm not trying to be funny. This is not funny. None of this is funny. This is what happens with women getting involved with men.
Oh, fighting?
And fighting. Yeah. Okay. Did you see that? It was one punch to the face and she's out. Now, I'm sorry this happened to her, but, you know, maybe that she should have had an alpha male there protecting her. Maybe they shouldn't have been there. Maybe they shouldn't go there. But the point is, this is not Hollywood. And this is what happens when women get real mad and they get into a job, a position where they start pushing and hitting people. If there's somebody there who doesn't care they're a woman or not and they crack them in the face like this, this is what happens. Now, this should never have happened. She should have never been hit. But you got to ask yourself a question. Why in the world did she think she could go up and push some dude like that? It's not okay. And the same when you get into a fight, there's always the reason you got into the fight, why you were at the fight. I remember I had a good friend of mine years ago. She was a spokesperson for the sheriff's department in Polk County. She's passed away now. She's in heaven. And she said to me one time, she goes, the reason people get into fights is because they're at the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong people.
Sometimes. There's
sometimes.
Exceptions to that, though.
Sometimes. Now, every once in a while, you have a variable on that. You should only be doing nothing, sitting in a movie theater, somebody starts throwing popcorn at them.
Yeah.
Okay? Happened down here. Okay?
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, somebody gets killed over the popcorn. There's nothing wrong with being at the movie theater. Sometimes there's just certain people out there who will cut you and shoot you and knife you and hit you just for fun. So what you got to do is avoid certain situations. If you see something escalating, it's easier at the beginning of that escalation to step away and realize, especially if you're carrying deadly force, that you need to step away and walk away.
That's exactly right.
Now think about it for a second. If you got a Glock 43X with a 15 round extended magazine in it.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're running hydroshocks.
Yeah.
Or fragmenting rounds or whatever you're using. You can inflict a lot of damage on a lot of people really fast.
Very quickly.
And
some that may not be innocent bystanders, too.
That's right.
This is the problem that you talk to law enforcement. This is what they train them a lot. You've got to watch your backdrop. This happens all the time. got somebody gets in a gunfight, and all of a sudden they start slinging rounds. All of a sudden, some 6-year-old girl gets hit down the corner.
You know, and it's the same.
Bullets don't stop. They have to hit something to stop. They don't just, you don't go out of your go. I missed the guy. The bullet stopped.
And remember now, another thing too, when you're in a situation like this, if you notice they're getting flanked.
Oh, yeah. Bad.
Now don't, this is why they have 4-man fire teams to watch each other's back. You got to be careful not to get flanked.
Well, and this is why I always tell people, and I'm funny about this. If I'm going to go out, I usually go out with always a couple friends of mine. As far as going out by yourself or going out with two people, especially if you're going
to
go out late and
easy
do something at an event, it's easy to get flanked. I don't care how good of a fighter you are. I mean, I was jiu-jitsu my whole life. I train and shoot all the time. Sometimes you just get hit. It's happened. You don't see it coming. A lot of times, situational awareness, people can't run up on you. But when you go to big events, because I've seen stuff, because I've personally been there and stuff like this, when events come out, comedy shows get out, and they get out 11, 12 o'clock at night, a lot of times people are extremely drunk, they're very belligerent, they're acting a fool, just like in this video. What happens is all it takes is one person to run their mouth the wrong way, and stuff starts escalating. Been there, done that, seen it. That's why I try to avoid it now. So if you're going to go to events like this that are late at night, if you're going to be out late, try to make sure you're going with a group of friends that you actually have that can watch your back, especially if you've got another couple with you, another guy. Because that's the thing, that whole dynamic would have changed in that fight if you had another guy.
Well, the problem probably everybody there was drinking. See, I've seen this all the time. You get brave when you get drunk.
A lot of people get real mean when they get drunk.
Well, people usually have one or two ways when they get drunk. You get real nice or real mean. And there's really nothing in the middle with that. But a lot of people who are pretty timid, most of the time, they can start really running their mouth when they get drunk. And they can't really back up what they're saying, but they think they're all that now because they have their inhibitions are gone. And I've seen that, too.
10 foot tall and bulletproof.
Yeah.
I always joke about back then. You get some of those guys that do that.
Well, and the problem with it is that they're not like that when they're sober. So be really careful. You know, I don't drink. I just don't. I may have a Bailey's or something on an airplane or a beer once a year, but that's not drinking. And because I learned a long time ago that when you drink, you basically lose situational awareness.
Exactly right.
Think about that for a second. You know, if you're staggering around, you can barely walk. You don't have much ability to protect yourself.
And you already look like a victim. You look like easy prey.
Well, you are easy prey.
Yeah, especially if you're walking around stumbling out on the street. That's a bad look, guys. Don't do that. That's not a good
with
look.
Women, it's even, I hate to say it, this is going to sound sexist, but I don't care. It's even worse with women.
Well, no,
it's bad enough when a guy is drunk.
I've always told, like anybody I know, I always say, if girls go out, they're going to go out for the night, they're going to go to the bar, they're going to go to a restaurant, they need to be going with 3 or 4 girls, minimum, period. That's just something mandatory.
But never try to go out there by yourself.
No.
That it's just too dangerous.
Well, especially now you got so many sicko pervert guys. I mean, there's been videos, so many stuff's even popped up in Tampa. The guys will just walk by, drop a little something to drink.
And ladies, do yourself a favor. This is really important. Make sure the tires on your car are good and don't be running around on ball tires getting interstate flats. I just had that happen the other day. Somebody sent me a text.
I hear that happen all the time.
And I've had interstate flats, but then
they're horrible.
And then the woman doesn't know how to change a tire in most cases.
And on top of that, changing a tire on the interstate is unbelievably dangerous. I mean, there are so many fatalities every year where people get hit.
I tried to change a tire one time on my Duramax.
Yeah.
They give you a jack about that big.
Yeah.
Right? And you're jacking it up and you can barely get
8,500-pound truck.
Oh, and you're sitting there.
And you're sitting there on the side of the road. The interstate's always tapered off on it.
Well, I was in a parking lot. It was a nightmare. And I finally I got right to the point of pulling the tire off, and the guy shows up from AAA like 2 hours later. And I'm like, this is great. I said, I told him, I said, just please swap it for me. I said, that's enough. But so that's me. I'm pretty doggone strong.
That's why it's called preventative maintenance in most cases. Unless you get a nail or some of your tire blowout, you generally don't have tire flats on the interstate unless you monitor your maintenance properly.
Make sure you maintain the tire. Make sure you keep the oil changed, too. Just thought I'd mention that.
Check engine light. There's a little light. Check engine light.
There's a reason it's
on. There's usually a reason it comes on. You can ignore it for a while, but don't get surprised when the car blows up and you go, I don't know why the check engine light's been on for 12 months. There's no oil in the car, man. No. My buddies that are mechanics,
this guy named Bobby. I mean, he called me up one time. My car broke down. Remember this? So did you check the gas? Oh, it's full of gas. So I had it towed in to a local dealership who's a friend of mine. Get it there. Won't start. Put a gallon of gas. And it fired right up. He said it was out of gas, Ted.
Yeah.
That was a dude. He was a weirdo.
Guys, appreciate the support. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. If you need anything, make sure the Brain and Body Restart Kit's still on sale with the product of the shaker. There you go.
We're about out of shakers. That deal's about done.
Magnesium Brain Food. Check it out. Zinc Glycinate on sale product of the week. Y'all have a great weekend, my friends. Stay safe. Stay strong. We'll talk to you on this show tomorrow, as always.
Keep your hearts and minds in Jesus, and hopefully I'll see you guys in church on Sunday morning. I love you guys. Have a wonderful weekend.
just hold on. Give me the floor. The Trends Journal, and I've said this before, I'm going to say it again. The Trends Journal is what Time magazine might have been long ago had they really uncorked it and let it happen. They didn't. It was a controlled message platform from the beginning. But it was at least a pretense of intellectual news and information. The Trends Journal leaves that so far behind, and I'm not exaggerating. Gerald has created something here that is absolutely